Good evening. This is Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and I'd like to welcome everyone to tonight's edition of Tuesday Topics. I'd like to thank Marlena and Rachel for doing recording for us tonight, and would also like to express my appreciation to Steve Bauer and others who are editing Tuesday Topics from a mishmash of discussion into a pearl of the finest wisdom, which it will probably never be. And obviously, we'd like to thank George Byes of Talking Communities for the software that makes it possible for to do this program. And that is the software that operates within this chat room and that allows us to produce Tuesday Topics every week. On the last program that we recorded, which was in fact 2 weeks ago because I had a dead computer and was feeling pretty dead myself last week, we discussed some of the ancillary events that happened at this year's American Council of the Blind Convention. And tonight, we're going to spend some time talking about some of the things that happened during the general session of ACB, where ACB conducts its business. ACB does constitutional and bylaw amendments during general sessions. It handles resolutions. This year it handled elections to the board of directors of ACB. And there were also a number of other topics that came up as part of our general session. And therefore, I think we have a lot to talk about. General sessions, for those of you who are relatively new to the ACB process, start on Sunday evening, and our first session on Sunday evening typically does not allow us to do roll call votes because we aren't organized in states or affiliates. Instead, we have an opening session where the president reports to us and where some awards are given out and where we do the initial roll call of affiliates to see who is recognized and validated. The first credentials committee report is given then, which is a preliminary indication of how many votes each group has. And then, early on Monday morning, the credentials committee report is adopted finally, and we are then seated in state delegations or affiliate delegations, as we will be then for the rest of the week. General sessions then run Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings, and generally all of Friday afternoon as well is devoted to the general session. While it is typical for us to allow for the possibility of needing to use Saturday morning, this year that option wasn't available to us. So we were obliged to try to finish on Friday afternoon if we possibly could. And we did manage to finish doing resolutions right up until 5 p.m. So that's kind of an outline of what the general session is and how it works. There are a number of folks who are in the room who were at the convention. Perhaps it might be interesting to start off by asking anyone who was there who wants to jump in and talk a little bit about their general impressions of the general sessions as perhaps a starting off point, and then perhaps whoever wants to speak can also help us by determining what direction we want to go in first. So let's see who jumps in first. And if you would, please tell us who you are and where you're from as you begin, so that people who are listening for the first time will know who each of you is.
Hi, I'm Don Moore from Port Charlotte, Florida. And I haven't been at a convention since, I think, 1998. And so it was interesting to see a convention and how ACB has progressed. And quite honestly, there were some pluses and there were some negatives. I've never seen the elections go as smoothly as this one went. I was pretty impressed with that. There was, you know, business was conducted during the thing. There were no major fights or anything like that. It was very nice. Two things that did concern me. One was that there seemed to be a communication problem between some of the board members, which kind of snuck out during the meetings regarding the National Center. But what I did note was that there were very strong feelings, and it did appear that there were some communication issues. The other problem that I noticed was a trend that if resolutions were not in completed form, I guess is the best way to put it, that a motion was made to refer it to the board to work on the resolution. And my thinking was, yeah, this could create the problems that I was speaking about in part number two, where people on the floor would think that, hey, this wasn't what we voted on, but in fact, they didn't vote on anything. I think if you don't have a complete resolution, you come back to it next year, or you work something out and have a motion from the floor rather than a resolution. You don't give it to the board to do that with. Other than that, it was a great convention.
Hi, this is Bob Hache from Massachusetts. This is my fifth convention, I believe, of ACB. I've been attending on and off since 1999. And I think that, first of all, I'd like to thank Paul and also you, Don, and the rest of the Florida Council for hosting us. I think it was overall a wonderful convention. I think, Don, perhaps you may have been being a bit kind when you discuss a lack of communication among the board, because it is my impression that the National Center issue was not brought to the attention of the full board and was not even put on the agenda of any of the board meetings, and that it was put before the membership without being put before the board first. That's my impression.
Hello, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I have never been to an ACB convention. Maybe sometime I might take the plunge, but I really enjoyed listening to it, as I have past conventions, and really appreciate ACB Radio for putting it on. It makes you feel like you're right there, and I think it probably a lot of folks feel that way.
This is Marlena in Seattle, and I can't disagree with anything that's been said thus far, but just to add that one of the things that surprised me, and I don't mean to be critical of a committee on which I've never served, being the Resolutions Committee, and I think it's a committee that probably is, if not the hardest working, certainly right up there among the hardest working committees at convention. But I was surprised that it seems to me, to my memory, that every resolution that came forward came with a do pass recommendation. And that surprised me. I think I can remember in other years at least a no recommendation from the committee.
Yeah, I think all of them were recommended with a do pass this time. We probably need to go back and pick up a little bit for those members who were not there, and talk a little bit about both what the American Center was, and we need to be careful to call it the American Center so that it doesn't get confused with another entity that's called the National Center. So to provide a little bit of background, in 2004, the American Council of the Blind passed a resolution that asked a group to be formed to work on creating what was then called a Hall of Fame. And somehow, from that Hall of Fame resolution, we got to a place at the ACB convention where the membership was asked early on Thursday morning to endorse a mission statement and a motion. And the two of them essentially asked that ACB allow the creation of a separate corporation, which would be charged with the job of raising funds so that ACB could eventually acquire some real estate in the Washington, D.C. area. That would be where our national office would be located. That would be where meetings could be held. And that would also be a place where the Hall of Fame itself could be housed. Now, procedurally, I guess I would add only one other point to those that have already been made, and that is that essentially the program of ACB has always, at least in my mind, constituted an agenda. And when we adopted rules for operating the convention, we also essentially, it seems to me, adopted an agenda. And one of the other real things was that the American Center, which is an extremely important departure for ACB to be making, was not officially on our agenda for the week. And there was no prior notice given to anyone that I'm aware of until the matter came up on the floor at a little after 8:30 on Thursday morning. And so that's certainly another factor. With regard to the board of directors issue in the American Center, it was certainly not an unknown thing. I had heard about it 2 or 3 months prior to this, because NELDS, the National Education and Legal Defense Services, had held a board meeting at which they allocated some funds for some initial cost development. And at that time, at least the general concept of the American Center was discussed. Our president, Chris Gray, wrote an article in the Braille Forum where he actually did discuss the American Center and the concept thereof. From Chris's perspective, bringing the matter before the general membership and having the general membership endorse it meant that, at least to a degree, he didn't need to go to the board because the general membership, in fact, approved of the American Center in a voice vote. Whether that constitutes a departure for us from the traditional way that ACB does its business and handles things will be something that we'll have to wait and see. But I think people are right to have certainly raised the issue. It was rather odd that the immediate past president, me, as well as the first and second vice president, felt impelled to speak on the American Center issue and to indicate a concern that this matter had not, in fact, been brought to the board, and that at least the impression was given that the board was bypassed. But perhaps we could stop for a moment and ask folks, if they're inclined to get into a discussion of this issue, whether from what they heard at the convention, the American Center seems like a good direction for ACB to be going. It might be interesting for those folks who were there and have had an opportunity to discuss the issue to share where they've ended up.
Just a quick question, Paul, maybe some clarification. What's the basic purpose of the American Center, and does it have any similar purposes, or is it totally different than NFB's National Center?
I think it depends an awful lot on who you talk to in terms of the answer to that question. It certainly is the intent to acquire a building. It certainly is the intent to use that building as the national headquarters of ACB. It certainly is the intent to make it the headquarters for a museum and Hall of Fame. It certainly is the intent to use the building to hold meetings in addition to providing office space. And it's also the intent to actually rent out some of the space that ACB acquires in terms of building some revenue within ACB. It's not, I think it's very hard to say that there aren't any similarities between the American Center and the National Center. That's all I know. I don't know if, just before we go back to the general discussion, does anybody else want to respond to the question?
This is Don again from Port Charlotte, and I would have to say that based on the discussion, rather, that was given at the meeting, that, you know, we were talking about laboratories and so forth, and I thought, you know, we're a pretty low incidence population to have two such centers, but I can certainly see the advantage to owning our own building, renting some of it out for income, being able to expand our staff should we have the need, and so forth. I think that we need to have a knowledge of what we do best, what we do well, what we have the potential of doing well, and work at that rather than to branch out into areas where possibly we would have a lot more catch-up time than is feasible for us. And I think that the discussion rightly should have been with the board, should have been with a committee to come back with a reasoned proposal rather than an emotional pitch which was emotionally voted on.
Well, I think that this is quite enlightening because I haven't really heard too much about the American Center. I did during the convention, and if anybody wants to elaborate more about what the center does, that would be interesting to me.
Yeah, Tim Cummings, I guess what worries me, just from what little I've heard and what little I know about the NFB's National Center, I would hope we would not necessarily get into the research end of things. Not saying that, you know, we couldn't do it, and I think that, but I just don't know if that's where ACB wants to go. And I'm wondering, just because I when I think of the NFB's center and what some of the things I think they're going to be doing, I get worried about having, you know, kind of research that's NFB endorsed, whatever that means, and whether the outcomes will not presuppose a particular position. But I wonder, too, how much of the whole impetus for this center was, the ACB center was, you know, the desire to really do this, and how much of it was, you know, we have to play catch-up with NFB, who's kind of showing us up. So I don't know what people think about that.
This is Marlena, and I guess since we're talking about the center, the American Center specifically, I think it's a good idea whose time is not yet here for ACB. I think that I would so much love to see the energy that will be used in guiding and directing the development of the center put to use to improve and make more substantial our beloved ACB. If ACB could raise $6 million, or I can't remember what the figure was that I seem to remember somebody said, but I remember thinking, wow, if we could drive that kind of energy for the American Center, why not develop an advisory committee for our own ACB with the same kinds of people on it who can help us bring in that kind of money and then go forward to give birth to this idea.
I came in a little bit late, so if I'm out of line, Marlene, correct me. My big thing about the center is I did not vote on it one way or the other, and the reason I'm saying is I want to leave the average promoting of being a source of income like the KNFB reader or any of those kinds of things. I want to leave that to NFB, and I want us to remain what we have broke off from them for, and that is to be an advocacy organization. If putting the ACB center in place will further enhance that possibility, then yes, I'm for it. But if we're trying to outdo NFB, I'm not for it, if that makes any sense.
Well, you know, some comments here. This is Ron Melliman from Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I don't know whether I'm opposed to it or in favor of it because I don't know enough about it. And I don't, that's one of the problems, is that from the resolution that we adopted, in 2004, to what came out in this convention is entirely, seems to me like, entirely two different animals. And so I have a problem with that. I hate to jump on the bandwagon and endorse something I don't know enough about, especially when we're talking about the magnitude of dollars that we are. That brings me around to the other point I was concerned about, and that's that funding is a major issue of ACB. It has been. And, you know, to me, rather than calling this the American Center or whatever, it makes more sense to me to go on a capital fund drive for the specific purpose of acquiring a building that we could put ACB headquarters in and have some space for our use and perhaps to lease out and not worry about an American Center as such. But, you know, go on a fund drive for the purpose of developing the funds to acquire a building and that would have a lot of advantages to us, and hopefully in the process would help get our financial house in order. I'm real concerned about the money end of it. I just, you know, if we can't afford to put out the Braille form, I'm real concerned.
Yeah, Ron, this is Bob Hache. I strongly echo your concerns about the money, and they promised us that the money would be kept separate, but given our current fiscal struggles, it might be too early if indeed it is time at all for such a center. My other concern, and I don't know whether or not this was addressed, I certainly hope that this is not going to lead us down the slippery slope to becoming a service provider, as is the other organization. I think if that were the case, that would certainly taint our principles of, you know, consumer first and all that sort of thing.
I just want to go back to the money thing again and maybe give my opinion about the possibility of becoming a service provider. You know, I am working very hard to find funding for ACB Radio, and it's really hard. You know, it's really hard to get people interested in giving their money to blindness charities, it seems, if you will. And I guess I just really wish that the money that they were going to raise for the center would first be raised for ACB, and then secondly, again, once we're more solvent, for the center. And as far as becoming a service provider, I could be naive and wrong, but it seems to me that unless we have some major changes in the organization, that the member's voice is still the voice that guides and directs and proclaims the direction the organization takes. If people had voted this down, and I'm not suggesting that people should or shouldn't, but the fact is, if they had voted it down, it wouldn't be an issue because they would not have proceeded.
Hi, this is Cheryl from Miami. And the question that I have had for quite some time concerning the financial aspect of all of this is that if this is a separate entity, it seems as though, excuse me, I'm trying to formulate my thought. It seems as though there's a mixed message, and help me understand if I'm not understanding this. The mixed message to me says, this center, part of its purpose is to lease out offices to financially benefit ACB, all right? The second aspect is, this is a separate entity from ACB. So those are mixed messages to me. So who will determine what percentage of money ACB would ever get, if any, besides a whole assembly of other questions that tie into that? Whose pockets are getting lined? Who makes decisions about where the money's going and the expenditure as well as the income? When there's death, who will carry on those decisions? And what if the whole thing collapses? Does all of that money that was earned or procured go to ACB? And how can it if it's a separate entity? To me, it's a very confusing thing. Thank you.
Well, it seems like it should go to everybody. You know, that the center should belong to everybody, I would think, if there's to be a center, American center of some sort.
Well, it's a corporation, and it'd be handled like any other corporation. In that regard, ACB would in essence own the corporation. So I don't. I see your point, and it could be an issue. And those are the things that aren't at all clearly defined. I mean, not at all. And those are legitimate issues to raise. But it would be set up like a corporation. And the building, the concept of the building, and our having a building, then that's not a bad concept. And the concept of being able to lease out space, if there, you know, was enough space to be able to do that, that's not a bad concept either. I mean, those concepts are not bad concepts. And to raise money, like what Marlena was talking about, to raise money, you really got to have a purpose. And a capital fund drive for the purpose of acquiring a building is not a bad idea within itself. you know, there's just a lot of other questions that we just don't have answers to.
Yeah, I think I think there are a lot of questions that surround the American Center that hopefully will gradually be answered, so that the membership who has now endorsed this idea will know exactly what it is that they've bought with their vote. We've probably devoted as much time as we ought to the American Center. Is there another component of the general session that folks who were there would like to see us spend a little bit of time discussing? Are there some specific resolutions or some specific constitutional amendments that occurred that people think would be worth our time discussing?
This is Shelley in Orlando, Florida. I'd kind of like to talk a little bit about resolutions in general. I have a couple of questions about one specifically, and just about the process in general. I am on, or was, I'm not sure whether I still am or not, on the resolutions committee here in Florida. We don't meet often, just usually at convention, and sometimes we really don't have a meeting then. So I got on the committee because I was fascinated by the process and was hoping to learn how they're written and why they're written and just a little bit more about it. My question specifically about one resolution was one that I missed. And it had to do with Social Security disability earnings. And I wondered if somebody could clarify for me what that resolution was, because I missed that session, so I didn't even hear the resolution read. What was it? What were we voting on? And what was the outcome?
Let's see, I think if I recall correctly, it was, the resolution was to remove the limitation on the substantial gainful employment to equal the ceiling that senior citizens have, if I recall.
I don't remember the precise provisions of the resolution that you're talking about. There really have been two kind of ACB standard resolutions that have been out there for a number of times, and I'm thinking that this was the second. The first is what Marlena described, but the second kind of resolution, and a resolution that's getting a lot more play, is to actually remove altogether the SGA, so that an individual who went blind and who was who had been gainfully employed, or who was blind and who was gainfully employed, once they began to receive SSDI, that is disability insurance, could actually go back to work and would in fact be able to earn $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 a year, and would continue to be able to collect SSDI. And the notion of why this is relates to the fact that there seems to be a general consensus that it's more expensive to live as a blind person than it is to live as a sighted person, and there are expenses that are directly related to blindness that ought not to be tied to how much money you make.
With all due respect, do we really believe that Social Security and the government is going to really pay attention because a few blind people write a resolution stating our opinion? I mean, do we really believe that we're going to have any impact? I don't, personally. I guess that's why I asked.
I don't think that a resolution in and of itself, and by the way, this is Brian Charleston, is significant enough to cause the federal government to stand up and take notice. However, its real value is making sure that when a staff member, whether it be executive director or legislative director or whatever, goes up and says, the ACB believes X, Y, or Z, that there's actually a piece of paper that backs up that statement, that the organization has gone on record as believing one way or the other. It's just in the beak of that individual, granting them legitimacy.
In that context, then, it does make sense.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say. It also gives the staff direction, a series of resolutions. The resolutions are the voice of the convention. So staff take direction from the voice of the convention. So I think it's a very important process.
I think the other thing that we need to say is it really doesn't matter very much whether the federal government will jump up and down over anything that ACB says, but ACB uses resolutions in effect to create and build the philosophical and policy foundations on which the organization is based. So when you pass a resolution like this one, what you're really doing is you're making policy, and you're saying that the organization as a whole is endorsed by the membership, which is the supreme authority of the organization, has in effect adopted a specific policy, and that policy can't be lightly ignored by anyone. To use this as an example, let's just assume that I'm correct. If a bill were to come before Congress next year that said, let's do a linkage resolution, that is, let's link with the senior citizens again as we were before, it'll be interesting to know how our staff should be expected to respond, because in essence, if I'm correct, we've passed a resolution that essentially says there should be no earnings limit. So should we actually support a raising of the earnings limit, or are we obliged by the policy that we've adopted to go to Congress and essentially say we can't support this because we don't think there should be an earnings limit at all?
I think that makes more sense to say that there should be no earnings limit instead of raising the earnings limit.
Memory serves, though, the wording this time covered all disabilities, not just blind, which I understand the coalescing nature of many in our organization. But as Paul said, when it comes down to, you know, nuts and bolts, if there's a policy issue that our staff is supposed to reply to, this could limit an awful lot our effectiveness. And that's something that really we didn't take the time or have the time, to review this year.
Are there other specific resolutions that people want to talk about that that they think were significant, or that they think were insignificant, or that they just think were interesting?
What's the deal about the coin? To be honest, that is one of the questions that I have about resolutions in general. They become so I don't know if they are long or if it just takes too long to read them. And I think sometimes when you get down to the place where the person reading says the committee recommends a do pass, the people vote yes just to get it out of, they've forgotten what they heard because it just took forever to get through it. I quite often, and I'm a words person, get lost in the gist of it. And by the time it gets to the end, I'm like, what was the point? I missed it.
Well, it was an interesting resolution. The resolution essentially reiterated ACB's position, which we have taken over the past year. And that position was that awarding all of the money that would potentially be raised by the creation of a Louis Braille coin to the NFP shortchanged other organizations who were doing really appropriate and effective work in the promoting of Braille. By the time that we got to the convention, that was a fait accompli, and we couldn't have any impact on the process itself. And so what the resolution proposed doing was that we send a copy of the resolution to President Bush and urge him to veto the coin bill. The resolution, in fact, did not pass. It was defeated by the membership. And so it's not a resolution that will go forward. Other resolutions or constitutional amendments, perhaps, that folks would like to talk about. There were some interesting ones of those. There was a constitutional amendment that was passed that limited the number of officers who could be elected from any given state to two. There were some other interesting constitutional amendments. There was a constitutional amendment that was out there that would have precluded a staff member who left the employ of ACB from running for office for a year. There was a constitutional amendment that moved the Board of Publications from a spot in the bylaws to a place in the Constitution. There was the completion of an exciting constitutional amendment that actually finally did enable us to begin to speak of chair people rather than either chairmen or just chairs, which is what the attempt was last year, but that process was in fact completed this year. So we will now be speaking of chairpersons in our constitution and bylaws. So those are some of the ones that immediately come to mind. Are there others that people would like to talk about, or are there some aspects of any of those that folks might like to discuss?
This is Shelley again. The business about chairperson, I really fail to even see the significance of that, but I'm not into that much political correctness. Does that extend to meeting procedure, or is that strictly in the way the Constitution and bylaws is written?
Well, if I understand your question, Shelley, it doesn't have any impact on meeting procedure. It simply indicates that where in the past we've used the word chairman, we ought to use chairperson. There's sort of a history in that this resolution was proposed last year, and the proposal was to replace the word chairman with the word chair. And like some other folks, I actually got up last year and indicated that I thought that chairperson was a more appropriate term to use, but we really can't amend constitutional components on the floor effectively. And so it was referred back to the committee and came back this year as chairperson. I had a problem with chair because that's actually a description of a piece of furniture and doesn't actually describe in enough detail for me, in language that's appropriate to a constitution, the term chairperson.
A quick statement about the two, what I think of as substantive changes in the Constitution, the one being the limiting officers to no more than two officers from the same state. I think that was a good thing. There have been times when we had three officers from California at the same time. And while California is our largest affiliate, I still feel like that allows for domination in a way that's unhealthy for the organization. The second was moving the BOP into the Constitution rather than in the bylaws, which I think protects it from frivolous alteration. And there have been years where I felt it was in danger of being altered by a simple majority in a significant way, and that it's an important enough body that ought not to be so easily accomplished. Putting it in the Constitution requires a two-thirds majority to change it rather than a simple majority as when it was in the bylaws. So I think both of those were real improvements in the Constitution. There are so many times that the changes in the Constitution seem picayune, but both of those, I think, were substantive.
I think that's a valid point, Brian. I did notice that this year that it didn't appear that the Constitution Committee was simply trying to demonstrate the need for their existence, but in fact did come up with some substantive ideas. I personally liked the idea of having people running for office take the responsibility, describe possible conflicts of interest and so forth. The idea of waiting a year before the person would run for the board, I think that's just an issue of good governance. And in a lot of organizations is done that way, especially now with all this Sarbanes-Oxley stuff that you hear about. I think the Constitution and Bylaws Committee actually did a fairly nice job this year.
I think the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, like the Resolutions Committee, has the very difficult task of, having to take information that they receive, sometimes from people who know how to write it well and do, and other times from people who don't, and make it make some sense. I find myself sometimes wishing, although I'm not sure that I agree with myself, but I find myself sometimes wishing that those who aren't at convention can't submit things because it's hard to get an explanation of what the heck were you really talking about. And I think that takes longer to get things worked as well.
At least from my perspective, the Constitutional and Bylaws Committee and the Resolutions Committee both do have extremely difficult tasks. And I think it's important for our listeners to understand that there's a fundamental difference between the way that we do things in ACB in the way that many other organizations do it. In the case of many other organizations, when a decision is made to send forward a constitution or bylaw amendment or, in fact, a resolution, the moment you have done that, you've actually gotten a moment in the sun on the floor of ACB, because there is a rule in our constitution and bylaws that says unless the maker of the resolution or the maker of a constitutional amendment or his or her designee withdraws the resolution or the constitutional amendment, once that is heard by the committee, it needs to be sent to the floor of the convention. The Constitution and Bylaw Committee, as well as the Resolutions Committee, do not, as was implied earlier, necessarily have to recommend that a resolution or a constitutional amendment, in fact, pass. But they certainly have an obligation to take it to the floor and let the membership decide those decisions. Other issues from the general session that folks would like to talk about?
I have a question, Paul. This is Bob Hache. I noted that the nominating committee had to meet twice. I thought that was one of the few negative things that happened at the convention, and obviously it happened because the first time it did meet in violation of the Constitution. I did speak against that particular motion mainly because I thought that reconvening that committee in a rush might create a different committee, and while what we did probably was in violation of the Constitution, that the committee that we might come up with might not be as representative as the original committee. And as you note, the results were slightly different in the second go-around. My question, it had been indicated that maybe this principle had been violated in the past. You and Brian are old hands at this. I'd like to hear either one of you speak to that, if indeed that had been violated before and this was just a repetition of something that had happened in the past. And I think we can now guarantee that it won't happen again after it came out so publicly that way.
I can't, Bob, speak to whether it was, whether in fact it had occurred in the past. The only way we could probably do that, and it's very doable, would be to go back through the membership of the nominating committee and compare them with people who might have been officers. I certainly don't recollect any occasion where that amendment has been violated, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. It isn't simply an issue, though, of saying, gosh, we did it wrong, let's just kind of swallow it and continue, because there is a specific reason why officers are not supposed to be a part of the nominating committee. And that reason has to do with the fear. And remember, fear and checks and balances are, in my view anyway, at the heart of the ACB Constitution. But what there was the fear that officers on the nominating committee would actually have an undue influence on nominees that might be likely to come out of that committee, in that their opinion may count for more, particularly with folks who are relatively new to the nominating committee process.
I would say that I have no recollection of there being this kind of violation in the past 20, 30 years. However, the most important thing about this time, there didn't appear to be an effort to double-check the validity of individuals serving on the nominating committee. Many, many times during roll call, when an individual is declared to be a particular affiliate's representative, the secretary or some presiding officer up at the front would declare that that individual wasn't eligible because they were already representing another affiliate. That's just one example. And that kind of checks didn't seem to take place this year, and would have caught this before it ever even making it to the committee process had it been done. With respect to the extra impact that an officer can have in nominating committee, not only has that been a concern, but there's been a ongoing gentleman's agreement that officers would not speak on behalf of candidates. Even though the Constitution doesn't keep them from doing that, they chose to bind themselves to a rule that said that they would not speak on behalf of candidates on the floor that hasn't happened in some time. The concern is wide enough that they took it upon themselves to do that during much of the past decade.
And most officers have held to that. There certainly have been a couple who've chosen to knowingly violate that that particular rule. But I think Brian's quite right. You sometimes think that it isn't necessary to have components in the Constitution because it ought to be possible for people to, in fact, do the right thing without having to dot I's and cross T's in a Constitution or bylaws in order to make it happen.
Going back to the general session that where we voted on the nominating committee meeting again, I thought that Michael Byington of Kansas came up with an interesting solution, which was to say that if the nominating committee had met in violation of the Constitution, which it did, that you throw out that committee's report and you just take nominations from the floor, and that was put up as a motion and then it was declared out of order. I had a long discussion with Michael, and he certainly sold me on the fact that his motion was and should have been declared in order.
Couldn't persuade the parliamentarian, though. I know there were some folks who talked with the parliamentarian later in the week who was absolutely convinced that this would constitute too huge a departure from the rules of order that we had adopted. I think there are a couple of ways that, three maybe, one of them was simply to ignore it and proceed as if nothing had happened. I think that would have been a bad mistake. The second is to do what we did, which was to debate the issue over a fairly prolonged period of time, then do a vote, then end up having to do a roll call vote on an issue that is certainly important, but we ended up spending a lot of time. Had I been president, what I would have done would have been to take in the third option, and that was simply say that it's been brought to my attention, that this is what has happened. We're not going to debate the issue because our Constitution is clear in terms of what it calls for. And so what we're going to do is we're simply going to find a time when the nominating committee can meet again. I would have simply made the announcement that that was what was going to happen rather than undertaking the debate that, in fact, went on. The other reason why an agenda is a good idea is it helps to provide appropriate structure for the meeting so that folks know where we're going and how it is we propose to get there. So for all of those reasons, I think the agenda is actually a pretty important concept for us to understand well. And I have a little concern that an item that wasn't even a glimmer in the program or agenda's eyes suddenly came up on Thursday. I guess I also have a little bit of concern in that the membership was actually being asked to adopt what amounted to some principles and to a supposed mission statement for the center, but we also adopted something that clearly said that the center would be a separate corporation and that it wasn't going to be bound by any of the affiliate components of the situation. So for me, that was an interesting kind of situation in that what we ended up doing as another element is we adopted the center concept as the membership without going to the board, but we also adopted the center component as a separate corporation whose authority, strictly speaking, came from the general membership and had never come from the board. And it's going to be interesting to see whether, in fact, the board will be considered a part of all of its decision making or whether the president will choose to say that since the membership endorsed this, the membership is the group that needs to change it. Since the board didn't deal with it, perhaps the board ought not to believe that it can make a lot of decisions about the National Center. The membership's spoken. They've agreed to a separate corporation, and that separate corporation will make all the decisions, and the board will perhaps have very little to say.
I was speaking with the chair of the Resolutions Committee, Judy Jackson, and she indicated to me that she was approached by President Gray with the mission statement as a resolution, but that he did not get it in time to meet the deadlines for the Resolutions Committee. So again, to me, it felt once again an attempt to sidestep the process that we had established. That is, that if the body as a whole is going to adopt a concept or process, that it come to the floor in the form of a resolution, and that for it to come to the floor as a resolution, it has to come by way of the committee and in a time slot where the committee is expected to be making a report.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, though we sometimes lose sight of this, I'm not sure that the president has any more right than another member does to fundamentally alter an agenda. So I think Brian's point is well taken.
The president seems like shouldn't have any more right to do that, but it seems like he's taking that opportunity.
Yes, taking the opportunity at the expense of other items on the agenda.
I think that's also a point that's well worth making. And I guess speaking of such things, the other issue that concerned me a little this year was that an announcement was made either Sunday night or Monday morning that, in fact, a decision was made. Again, the board wasn't consulted on this issue either, and maybe they didn't need to be, that we would not meet on Saturday. What business we got done till the end of Friday afternoon would be the business that we would be allowed to finish. And I don't necessarily have a problem with it as an idea, except I think it's an idea that needs to be adopted a year out, if that's a decision that we're in fact going to make. Because we've spent an immense amount of time over the past many years saying to our members that they know that there's a possibility that there'll be a Saturday meeting, and therefore they ought to take the responsibility of being prepared to stay over Saturday. And I think there are a lot of folks, perhaps with not lots of money, who found themselves here on Saturday with very little to do, and who might otherwise have in fact chosen to return on Friday afternoon or evening or very early Saturday morning.
The way that I heard it, if we were to have done a Saturday session, it was going to cost us an extra $10,000, something to do with convention space and meeting rooms and whatnot.
My issue is not so much not doing it. It's not letting the membership know that we're not doing it in advance. When we chose not to contract for Saturday, that decision must have been made substantially before the convention. Why not send out a notification to the membership that in fact a decision has been made by the powers that are that we not meet on Saturday because of the prohibitive cost, and as a result, folks needed to be given the option at least of adjusting their travel plan.
Paul, do you recall when you and I as board members first learned that there would not be a Saturday session this year as compared to the past, I don't know how many years we've been having closing session on Saturday, but it's been many, many years.
Oh, after we got here.
Exactly. So again, it was one of those decisions that were being made without even communicating those decisions or involving the board. It was a decision on how we would conduct business that was decided without board input of any kind.
I was on a membership call. Chris Gray asked me to join this call to, I think, talk about ACB radio or something. I don't remember. Anyway, and it was mentioned on that call, which was late May or early June thereabouts. That was the first that I had heard about it. But you're right. I mean, I don't remember seeing anything officially announced about it.
You know, I think one thing we need to remember is that officially, the convention has been announced as running from Saturday to Saturday. And that's what it's been officially announced as for the last several years. I think the last time that we actually met for business on Saturday was Des Moines. Houston. It could possibly have been Pittsburgh, but I don't think so. I know that was when we started this all-day Friday thing. My own personal feeling is that we should point out that, I mean, for instance, this year, the only business that was conducted on Saturday was the Board of Directors meeting and the dinner tour, the dinner theater thing that they always do on Saturday night. And that, I think, is too much to expect people to stay and then find out that those are the two things. Well, granted, I'm not trying to minimize the importance of the board meeting, but the board meeting does not garner the attendance of the majority of those at the convention through the year. There might be 40 or 50 people there, but certainly not 1,000. I mean, I do believe that we should be saying that the convention ends Friday night with a banquet. I think everyone was kind of surprised at the idea that the legislative seminar and diabetes seminar were moved, and people should know that way in advance of the pre-reg coming out.
I think that the points that Terry makes are appropriate and effective, and I think if we are going to change when we're going to meet, that decision has traditionally been made by the membership as a whole. I mean, our chain has been yanked as presidents by the membership's decision-taking powers, and in fact, I think that there have been a couple of resolutions that have been passed that have mandated Saturday, that have demanded that we end on a time certain. I don't think we can, as members of ACB, be concerned about the movement of the diabetes seminar and the legislative seminar, though I would hope that folks who stayed for those on Saturday, because that's when they've traditionally been, might have expressed their concern because of the number of things that were kind of jammed into Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we probably do need to draw our discussion of some of the decisions that were made at the convention this year to a close. I'd like to thank everyone for some really interesting discussion and some points well taken. I appreciate all of your input, and I'd like to thank those who listened for their participation in Tuesday Topics. On behalf of all of us who were here tonight, I'd like to thank you for listening to Tuesday Topics. Join us again next week on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. The first time you enter the chat room, the software will automatically download and install on your computer. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded.